Okay, quiet on set, everybody. Stand by. Roll camera. Speed. Roll sound.
Speed.
Mark it. And cue talent.
This week in production, I'm preparing for a small interview shoot. I'm going to take my GH5 kit because I'm traveling by myself with the producer. I have the kit down to two bags, and that includes two camera bodies, tripods, audio, etc. I thought I would invite my friend and colleague, Tom Chartrand from Shoreline Media, to discuss DSLRs and their role in production. Tom, welcome.
Good evening. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for coming on my second episode of This Week in Production. I wanted to talk to you about DSLRs. And
great.
And I know that you have GH5s. I also have GH5s. I have bigger cameras. You've got bigger cameras. I sort of wanted to have a conversation about when do you use a DSLR and why? And, you know, we'll get into what's in your kit and what's in my kit and what you like and what you don't like about it. So why don't you first, first I'm going to actually pour a little tequila to start this podcast.
Perfect.
I know that you have a glass by your side. What are you drinking tonight?
I've got a pre-poured, ready to go with a little whiskey ball in there to keep it chilled without diluting it. But it's a Nakano Reposado. It's a mezcal, and I've been getting into those lately. Really smooth. This one is super smooth, kind of sweet, a little bit fruity, a little bit of orange in there, and then it's all blown away by the smoky taste. It's
some people really describe me that way, a little fruity.
Oh, I thought you were going to say smoky.
Well, I am drinking my new favorite, the Don Julio Reposado Double Cask.
Mm.
And this, I don't drink it chilled like you.
It's a good one.
But I do enjoy this one. And if you haven't tried it, I know it's a little hard to get now because they stopped making it. But to you, cheers.
Cheers. Mm. This week in production.
Yeah. So tell the audience a little bit about yourself, what kind of work you do. We work together on certain jobs, but you have your own company and you do your own things. So tell us about yourself.
Well, I've got what I call Shoreline Media Productions, and I'm based here on Cape Cod. And it's a small market. I got my start doing cable TV commercials years ago. I did news before that. And when I first got out of college, I did sales in radio and cable down here because I thought that's where the money was. And, you know, in a small market, you got to really hustle. And my love was always production. And so I stuck with it, did news, moved over to commercial production, and really, you know, dug in. And one thing I noticed from your first podcast, something you talked about when, you know, you work in non-conventional, non-union shops, you tend to learn to have to do it all. In my position at Comcast, I was a producer, shooter, editor. And that's not a luxury that a lot of people get to have. So it gave me a lot of skills that you know, went right to what you said about being able to solve problems, do a little bit of everything, and then learn to do it well.
Yeah, that's a great skill. And I think that when you come out of a very traditional operation where you only have one job, you know, I work with plenty of people who are just camera operators, and that's great. They're great camera operators, but sometimes they don't have the skills to, you know, branch out into the other adjacent, you know, areas of production.
Right, right. And then when I broke out on my own, I was able to keep up the commercial production side as well as take on other things. And through another colleague of ours, I got to know the Panasonic world, and that's how I met you. And that really was a whole world-opening experience to be able to go places, do things. And since then, I've worked with a lot of different producers on different projects all over the country. And then I also have my niche here back at home, where it's gone from commercial advertising to a lot of nonprofit storytelling, corporate video. So it really, it runs the gamut. And I think it's a unique position to be in here in a small market like Cape Cod to be able to work full time in this media.
I think at another time I will have you on again and we can talk about the business of running your own production company and those challenges, because that's probably a whole hour at least on that.
I wouldn't, and a whole bottle of tequila
or more. But let's get to today's topic, which I said was DSLRs and why you might choose a DSLR over what I would call a traditional video camera. And I know that you have both a traditional video camera and DSLRs, and I do have also multiple cameras, traditional and DSLRs. So why do you take a camera out versus another camera that you might have in your, you know, tool set?
Right. And I fly drone as well, and there's a lot of different tools for all the different jobs. And, you know, in the beginning, I went from using the Panasonic P2, the big camera for everything, because when you shot news, that was the camera you used, and it had everything, you know, that you needed. And as time has progressed, you had the larger sensors and some of the cameras like the Panasonic AF100. You got to use lenses and get a little more accustomed to a cinematic look that sometimes those big cameras don't give you, when you can switch out lenses and have different choices. And then, you know, when the advent of the DSLRs came along, that Canon really came to the fore with, and I was able to use the lenses from that bridge camera, the AF100, which was sort of like a big body camera. You could switch lenses out, but they were micro four thirds. And then a camera, you know, as full bodied as the GH4, which I first had, and then the GH5, you could really do almost as much with that camera as you could with some of the bigger cameras. You know, now you can record 10-bit video, 24-bit audio. You can, you know, really do almost anything, get 10-bit out of HDMI to a proper monitor that records. I mean, really, you can kit out a small camera almost as well as you can a large camera. You know, and in my market, I choose to stick with that much more now because the quality is much better. It's 4K. And people aren't saying, "Ah, oh, you're shooting with an Arri, you're shooting with Blackmagic, are you shooting with Sony?" You know, that's not the world I live in. And if I have jobs that need that, then, you know, I can rent one without making that purchase. But where I am, it really is more than anybody realizes down here. You know, and everybody wants that full frame look, and in sticking with that you know, environment of the GH5, I bought a couple of Voigtlander lenses. They're 0.95 f-stop, and they are just creamy and buttery and give you a look as close to some of those full frames as I've ever seen. They're really, really nice.
And that's a good point, because in my world, I have choices, and I there's really not any limit to the camera that I can use. Occasionally there's a budget constraint, but more often than not, it's a constraint on physical amount of equipment and bodies that I have to transport gear. Uh-huh. But to your point, you have to make the right choice based on the market that you're in and the type of work that you're doing and what you need to achieve from that particular job. You know, you mentioned the Panasonic HPX 300, and, you know, those cameras had a place for a long time, still have a place in news primarily, but
right. And event work for,
absolutely. Yep. But the great thing about that camera was it sat on your shoulder, and the tools were all in the right place to operate it as a single operator. And that's one thing that I don't like about the DSLR form factor, is that you basically have to build these Franken rigs to make it work if you want to do that kind of shooting. And some people do. I personally don't, because that is not the kind of work I would choose a DSLR for. But some people, you know, maybe you're just starting out, or maybe you're in a small market and you don't have the luxury of multiple cameras. Maybe you only have a DSLR and you need that to be your Swiss Army knife. So maybe you do need to have a shoulder rig one day, and have it on a tripod or a slider or a car mount another day. So, you know, you might need to make those decisions based on the work that you're doing. That's not the work that I'm doing, and I'm fortunate for that, I guess. And I can use the DSLR in a way that works for me. But in your world, you know, you have a different set of needs. And as you said, you might choose the DSLR right now because it has better quality, which is sort of strange because the HPX 300 when you bought it new was probably how much?
I think when I bought it, it was upwards of $8,000 or $9,000. I think, and then the lens on top of that, and then all the other accessories that went with it.
Right, so that was probably $15,000 or more when you kitted it out versus your GH5, which you probably have invested probably, what, $8,000?
Yeah, if that. I mean, I've got two of them. I've got a GH5 and a GH5S and a ton of lenses, but a lot of those came from my time with the AF100. And, you know, so it's been a progression. It's been a progression and something calculated to be able to make that equipment last longer, get a good look. In the meantime, I've got the Atomos Ninja for the Ninja V, and I've got a regular Ninja, the bigger one, the Inferno, you know, for monitoring and recording, and a Ronin to be able to use without, you know, so you've got a nice gimbal look for one of the cameras. A variety of lenses that are all in that same ecosystem of Micro Four Thirds, you know, and it does kind of pigeonhole you a little bit. But again, like we say, it's the right tool for what I'm doing. And it's also consider, you know, when you travel and you travel a lot, it's kitted out now that I can travel with maybe three bags and plus a tripod. And I've got every lens, I've got grip gear, I've got a full light kit in one Pelican 1510, which is that Leica's light panel kit. So you can fly and have everything with you that you need without, you know, necessarily having to have a truck to do a two camera shoot and get the look that you want today.
That's a great point. And that's for me, the number one reason that I have a GH5. I actually have two GH5s as a interview kit because I can roll it in one think tank carry-on bag. And that kit, it literally has two camera bodies, two lenses, maybe three lenses, two tripods, batteries, monitor. Everything that I need to roll out two cameras fits in one little bag. And that's the reason that I'm using a DSLR in those scenarios. If I am traveling normally with my Varicams, I mean, you've been on the jobs where we, you know, I travel with 15, 16, 20 cases sometimes.
I was going to say 20 plus.
and that's great when you have, you know, five or six people to help transport all that gear. It's a pain in the neck getting through the airport, getting in and out of rental cars, getting in and out of buildings. So some jobs, that is appropriate because you want the look, you want the features, you need to have, you know, flexibility with where you're mounting cameras. But sometimes the budget and the need for all that crew and gear is not there. So for me, the size of the kit, the fact that, you know, these, even the GH5, you know, even though a GH5 is not a full frame camera, it's still a bigger sensor that's in that HPX 300. HPX 300 has a 2/3-inch CMOS sensor.
Exactly.
Or maybe a 1/3, I'm not sure. But
no, actually, you're right. It's a 1/3.
It's CMOS, a 1/3 CMOS. And what's in a GH5 is probably, I would say, three times the size of that sensor. So better low light handling, that shallow depth of field, that, you know, sort of cinema look is easier to achieve. So
right, with the right lens.
With the right lens, and it's much better in low light. So that's why I choose it. And it sounds like almost now in your market, you actually prefer to work with the GH5.
That's exactly right. And there's two products, and I mean, we're not even sponsoring products or anything, but there's two products I think that made it absolutely easier to be able to do the work and have the professional look that I have, and I know you've got some, is those Core batteries. that go underneath the camera and mount on the tripod.
Right, from Switronics.
Switronics, right. And I've had their batteries all along, even for the HPX 300. But those cores, two of those cores, I can shoot interviews all day, plus power the Atomos Ninja. But then also having the ND faders, I've got a few from Genis and from Tiffin, but having an ND fade so that you can shoot live, even if you're doing a little bit of run and gun, because in the GH5, the image stabilization is just crazy. To be able to do that and, you know, run around on the fly like you're, you know, like you have iris control on a big lens instead of that clicky, you know, iris control on the camera itself, it just has such a great look.
Right. You're talking about a variable ND filter that screws onto the front of your lenses. And that's probably, you know, we can talk about what's in the kit and, you know, maybe that's the lead into what's in your kit. But yes, an ND filter is very needed because there's not one built into the camera, whereas a big camera like the Varicam or your C300, but that's a different friend of ours.
Yeah, right.
Your HPX 300 has three built-in ND filters for 2, 4, and 6 stops.
Right.
Whereas the GH5 has nothing built in, so you have to add it. And you can do that.
You got to add it to be able to get anything out of those lenses. Yeah.
Right. Because the whole point of those lenses is to try to shoot wide open or as close to wide open as possible. And without some way to cut down on light, that's impossible to do.
Right.
So what's your kind of go-to kit for your GH5?
Well, I carry two in a think tank, one of the roller boards. I think it's the second largest or maybe the largest carry-on size. So I've got a GH5 and a GH5S in there. And one of them, I keep the 8SINN cage on that. And I use that all the time. Put, you know, wireless mics on there, the Ninja, and keep that kitted out. Then I have the GH5S and I keep that bare because I use that with the Ronin quite a bit for event work, running around, B-roll, things like that. So along with those two cameras, I've got five of the regular small batteries and I've got two of the Switronics core batteries. And with that, I can get through a whole day on the Ronin. I can get through a whole day on the tripod and, you know, not have to worry about plugging in or power. And as far as lenses go, I've got two of the fast Voigtlanders. Those are 0.95, super fast lenses. And so
what focal length are those?
I've got the 17.5 and the 25.
And is that a good range for you?
For me, it is. I'd like maybe one more that's a little bit higher. So, you know, the 17 is effectively a 35 millimeter full frame and the 25 is a 50. So they're really good portrait lenses for doing interviews, doing B-roll when you're sort of, you know, outside and on the periphery. But I think they make a 45. So maybe it's a 40 because it goes to an 80. No, 42.5 to get be an 85. And that's one I'd like to add to the kit. I've got a Canon FD50, which is a sort of a go-between. It's a 1.4 and it's an old lens. It's a classic. It's like, you know, probably from the 80s and it's just got a really neat look and is another good portrait lens. And then I've got a set of Lumix lenses, which are super clean. They're Panasonic Lumix. I've got an 8-18, a 12-35, and then a 35-100. And for run and gun, they are spectacular. You know, they're constant 2.8s. The 8-18 is a 2.8-4, but the 12-35 and 35-100 are constant 2.8s, so you can zoom without losing, you know, your light levels and, you know, run around. And they're real good run and gun lenses as well as decent portrait lenses too, when you don't want to really have to worry about that super, super shallow depth of field that the Voigtlanders give you. And on top of that, it's pretty standard. You know, in the kit, I've got the two XLR adapters that come with the GH5. And that was a godsend coming from that giant sled that was under the GH4.
The YAG,
exactly. That's what people did when they saw it. It was gigantic, and it was a monster, and you couldn't do anything with the camera beyond putting it on a great big tripod. So having those little XLR adapters on the top of the camera really give you everything, again, the larger professional big cameras have, you know, as far as audio goes. And they're pretty good. They're not, you know, studio quality. Sometimes there's some compromises in the audio quality, but not for 90% of the work.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that was a big deciding factor for me in going to a GH5 was the ability to put XLR audio in either line level or mic level with phantom power if I needed it, and have that as part of the kit without a big box underneath. Now, since I bought my kit, and I'll talk a little bit about what's in my GH5 kit. I don't have an S. I've got two GH5 bodies. I've got the, I can't even think of the name of the adapter that I have, but I've got Micro Four Thirds. Yes, thank you. Metabones, Micro Four Thirds to EF adapters, because I have a lot of EF lenses. I've got several L series lenses, but I've also got a set of EF Canon Cine Primes, which on the GH5 look dynamite. And even though that lens is heavier than the camera, you can mount it up with a rod system and lens support and mount it on a real tripod, and it's a great little kit. And I'll make a point about how that looks in a minute, because that's part of the factor sometimes in deciding what gear to use. But I've got the EF adapters. I bought recently a Sound Device MixPre 3 for audio.
That's great.
It's a compact, if you don't know what it is, it's a compact. It's a mixer, but it's not your traditional kind of Sound Devices mixer. It's more of a recorder that will pass audio to your camera as a secondary means of getting sync. It's primarily meant as a recorder, as an audio interface, but it's small enough, it fits underneath the camera or underneath the core battery, and it lets me take three channels in, because sometimes I do an interview setup where I need three inputs, and with the Panasonic adapter you only get two inputs. So
and
for
it
me
time code too, right?
It does take time code off the HDMI of the camera, and it will pass that to the sound device, so you can have sync time code and things like that. There's a couple of little issues that I have with it. One mainly is that the line out of the MixPre, which goes to the GH5, is on an 1/8-inch jack, and there's noise in it. There's a ground loop. And I talked to Sound Devices about it. They just said, oh, well, it's just the nature of using an unbalanced connector, but it seems a little funny to me. But I bought a little $10 ground lift from Amazon, and it fixed the problem. And it's, for me, I'm just feeding reference audio back to the GH5. Right. But I've got two different cages. I've got the 8-SIN, because that was the first cage to come out. And I needed a cage right away, so I bought one of those. It's okay. It's not my favorite cage. I did later buy a Zacuto cage, which I'd like a little better. It's a little beefier. It's really solid. It screws into the body of the GH5 on two points. And it just is a nice, secure way to mount accessories. I do have a Ninja V, which, again, is a game changer, because now I can record ProRes.
Absolutely.
As well as an internal recording, which might be long GOP or All-Eye 200, 400. I don't really use the All-Eye recording too much. I'll ask you about your feelings on that in a minute. And then I use the core batteries and think tank rollers. And I like the kit. And like I said, it fits in a think tank bag, and literally two bags and a lighting kit, and I'm all set. I'm ready to go with just, you know, three cases.
Right. One note on the Atomos and the audio mixer is, I did see something that there is an issue with taking the HDMI out of GH5, going to the Ninja V, and then trying to pass that with time code to the audio mixer. I think there's an issue.
It doesn't
doing that,
pass.
So
it does not pass it. Right. So if you are going to use it that way, you can't have time code, because there's no loop out of the sound device. there's a loop out of the Ninja V, but you can't do it the other way. If you could do it the other way, you could feed to the sound device first and then to the Ninja, but it doesn't work right now that way.
But thank God Final Cut Pro 10 is just so great with syncing audio. It's hardly a concern.
That's very, very true. And the only rub that I have with the batteries is that if you do have, like, they're great if it's a very lightweight, small camera package you're putting together, because it has to sit on the bottom of the camera. It's how it mounts, and that's how the cables get fed through. And it's all plastic. And right.
Mount from the camera is, it's horrible.
If you have an EF lens, like if I put a 24-70 2.8 lens on it with an adapter, and I've got the XLR mount, and I've got a monitor, that is a flex point that feels, it's never failed, but it moves, and it's a little weak, and it's a little disconcerting, and I wouldn't use it anywhere precarious, because I would feel like it could fail at any point. I am rethinking. I love the batteries because they do last a long time and they're not that expensive, and they have USB and they have DTAP, so I can power lots of devices at the same time from one source. But if I needed something a little more bulletproof, I would probably go with a gold mount adapter on rails and do it that way.
And even a small slider, you know, there's an issue because, you know, you count on having that smoothness and having something so solid sitting on that. Any little movement, it really amplifies it. You know, when you've got a GH5 on the core with a Ninja V, it becomes a little top heavy, and that little mount just doesn't quite handle it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And that's a good point. And I think it gets back to an earlier point that you made about there are some compromises.
With everything,
you know, some of the things that are missing out of the box in a DSLR can be overcome, but some things can't. So that's something to keep in mind. Like, if I had a choice and there was no restrictions on what I could use, like, I wouldn't choose the GH5 first, just because for me, I'm a more of a traditional big camera where there's dedicated buttons and things that you like. I still get lost in the menus on the GH5, and I'll tell the audience, I've called you on times and go, Tom, where's that setting to turn
where
off this?
Do I find this?
So I do still wrestle with some of those features of a small camera system. So I would choose myself a bigger camera system if I didn't have any restrictions. But of course, we don't all live in that world. I certainly don't. So, you know, you use what you have to use. But that brings me to this point we sort of danced around before, which is the look. The look
and
of showing
look
up.
Of the, right, not the look of what, you what you're shooting. It's the other look, yeah.
The appearance, how you appear to the client or to the client's client, if you're doing work for, let's say, an agency. You know, you sometimes have to project or portray something more than it is. And that's why sometimes I will take my GH5 and I'll kit it out with the Cine Primes, and I have the Bright Tangerine matte box, which is a clip-on matte box, which I love, very light. I can fit two of them in a very tight space. They've got very soft rubber hoods, and they have the filter holder is like a clip into the front. So there's no trays to come out, no screws, very nice compact kit. Yeah. But when I put that all together on a nice tripod, it doesn't look as, you know, rinky-dinky as maybe just the GH5 with a little Micro Four Thirds lens and nothing else around it. And there is sometimes that dog and pony show that we all have to do. It's part of the business sometimes. And, you know, that's how I combat that, is I'll dress up the camera with some accessories to not only,
to
it gives you a better product as well, but it's also sometimes for the appearance.
Right. Yeah. It's about dressing to impress. And that's what some agencies want, and you want to be able to give it to them. You want to be able to give them, you know, the absolute, you know, best of everything attainable. So totally understandable.
So we've been talking for quite a while. I think we got a lot. I think we've got a lot of information out. I hope it was useful, and we could certainly talk, you know, for many hours on these things. And so I would certainly hope that I could invite you back on and talk more.
Would love that.
Great. Anything else that you think you want to add to this discussion before we wrap it up?
I don't think so. I think we really hit on everything. I mean, it's the, you know, the overriding point of everything should be it's using the right tool for the right job that is required. You know, so whether it's a DSLR, who you're trying to impress, how you're trying to impress. They're great tools, but there's a lot of considerations and some compromises.
Yep. Well said. Well, thank you, Tom, for joining me today.
Thanks, Art.
Well, that's a wrap on episode 2 of This Week in Production. Special thanks to Tom Chartrand for joining me. Be sure to check out the Facebook group This Week in Production for comments and links and notes from the podcast.